Sorry, I figured that, but nobody else. Oh,
Joe,
Jesus.
Hello. Jesus. Oh,
all right, let's do this. Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the Nomide Podcast. Just for interest's sake, this is the last podcast of 2023. Very exciting times. Comments or questions, leave them on the Nomide Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or an email to nomidepodcast2021@gmail.com. We're bare bones tonight. We just got myself, Bob, and Darren. Hey, Bob, what's going on, man?
Well, I don't know how interesting this is or how what it says about us. Anyway, everything's great. Everything's great so far. And happy holidays to everyone. And,
I'm rethinking paying Bob to be the podcast PR guy.
Jeez. Fuck you.
And Darren, how's it going? Darren, what's going on?
Well, unlike Bob, I think it says a lot for us to be bringing the people what they want and what they need. It shows that we're all about the people. I, for one, have a million other things to do, but I choose to enlighten our followers.
Yeah, give us four.
Four what? Four things to do?
Four things you have better to do.
Give us two of them I'm doing right now with my drink and my pants.
Oh, my God.
It may happen while the podcast is on.
And literally shortly.
Oh, my God.
We usually drink, and it's usually with people, so I could go find someone people to drink with and talk about nonsense.
Just drag somebody off the street.
I prefer to sit here and talk about martial arts, which I think is one of the reasons why we stayed on this podcast so long. So,
okay, let's... Before we get on to the podcast topic, and by the way, tonight's topic is, it's pretty free form. We've just come up, each of us come up with a couple of talking points and we're just going to throw them out. And I have no idea what the guys are going to come up with and they don't know what I'm going to come up with. So, it's kind of like the two question podcast, but just, under a different guise as it were. But before we get there,
rumor has it that Mitch only has one talking point and he could only come up with one.
Rumor has it.
Yes, what are the other rumors out there?
Yes, that is true. But I'm sure that I'll come up with another one before we get to my second go round. But before we get to the actual questions that we've all come up with, we got some feedback from a listener, which I always appreciate. And I want to reiterate this, good or bad, love getting emails, love getting feedback on the podcast. But I do want to bring this up. And just put it out there for discussion's sake. This is specific to the last podcast we did. And I'm just going to read the comments as they were sent to me. So it says, hi, Mitch. Where are we here? I'm going to skip that. I've been an avid listener of the podcast, although unable to come on air. You were good enough to discuss my topics in the past. Your quote-unquote "we won't conform" approach to the martial arts broadcast has been refreshing and comedic. However, this week was totally insensitive. Bob's statement on the tale of bereavement within your group, and he's referring to Jason's mom passing away, that he was contemplating suicide was met with laughter and a suggestion that he should do it on the podcast. Sorry,
that's
I know. I still, Jesus, I know. Christ.
I was ready to actually give a good answer, thinking, "Yeah, the guy's got a point." And then I just sniggered. Now I just feel like a total heel.
I know, me too. This is the line that I actually want to discuss. Whether you like it or not, a public broadcast is influential, and a subject like that at a time of year when many people struggle with mental health. To ridicule this is wrong. I won't belabor the point, as your personas online make me feel like there'll be a two-fingered response to my issue, and I'll be considered a snowflake. Anyway, it had to be said. So, one at a time, let's go around the table and just, what are your initial thoughts? What are your reactions to that statement? Darren, what do you think?
Well, first up, like what he said is he... something about he wouldn't come on to talk about it or whatever because we'll just give him two fingers up. Totally untrue. I think by the whole nature of reading it out for discussion means that we are taking it seriously. It's not just what a snowflake, as he called it. No, we're actually taking it seriously. It is being brought. Now, if we do belittle it after the fact, okay, so be it. But I think he does have a point. I think it's akin to a politician saying what they actually believe in, but then being called on it and saying, well, he shouldn't have said that. They're going, but he's right. I know, but he shouldn't have said it. He's a public figure. He has to watch what he says. So there is a certain element to that aspect of it. The other thing is, okay, people do make mistakes. Maybe it was insensitive. Okay. All you can do is go back and say, yeah, sorry about that. Obviously, if you've been an avid follower of the podcast, we've said many insensitive things, many inappropriate things over the past couple of years. None of it is meant to be offensive or anything like that. That's not to say it's not offensive. It just means it's never meant as deliberately offensive to belittle somebody unless they had it coming to them. And the other thing is, Bob just saying something about a joke about committed suicide on the podcast has no bearing on anybody else that might be depressed and feeling suicidal. Do you know what I mean? Like, you look at any comedian that does it for a living and has a massive following in the millions and has specials on Netflix and all that. They poke fun at just about anything that's offensive. And sometimes the more offensive it is and the more reaction they get of an audience in the negative way, the more they figure they're doing their job. So just one offset comment by Bob or any of us, I don't think... I'm not giving two fingers up to the guy, but I'm thinking, geez, you got to take that in context, and you got to realize that, you know, we could say something that's legitimate, like capoeira is a useless martial art. That's probably going to offend anybody that's not a good one. I can't think of saying
it offends me because I took capoeira for a long time.
Yeah, no, we'll use the Dillman pressure point thing. We've constantly made fun of that. Now, anybody that takes that seriously is going to find that offensive. However, we all know that it's ridiculous. So we do that. So even at with the best of intentions, there's always going to be somebody or a group of somebodies that will find something offensive. And by his opening thing about how your no-nonsense or no-whatever-it-was approach to the podcast should kind of allow him to understand that we can't really bow down to... like really work on things we say because it might offend somebody. That's going to take away the whole premise of the podcast, in my opinion. You have to be able to speak freely. If it offends people, all we can do is welcome emails and apologize if it was too offensive and take it seriously and explain it. But beyond that, I couldn't see ever stopping it, if you know what I mean.
Bob, thoughts?
The gentleman said something to the effect of, like it or not, a podcast is a public facing thing, and therefore you ought to consider the things you say on the podcast and whether it's offensive or not. Now, all right, this podcast episode right now is a public facing incident. So I'm going to take the opportunity to say, if what I said was offensive, I don't care. If what I said wasn't funny, I really care about that. So if it's not funny, I will take it back. I'll never say it again. I will put my hand up and say, I'm sorry. But if it garners a laugh, I'm sorry, but F you, I'm going to say it. And it doesn't matter. I don't care who it offends. Like, this argument's been going on for decades now, and I'm firmly on the side of get ready to be offended if you live life in this society. And if you are if you insist on not being offended, I'm sorry, I'm not following along with that. I'm not, what do you call it, I'm not receiving that. I think that's all I have to say.
I'm not available for that. I've got a couple of comments leveraging off not only what you two have already said, but what the individual who wrote in said. And let's start with the notion of an apology. Actually, let's start with the notion of what I responded to that listener with. What I said was, in essence, the last thing I want to do is put a muzzle on anybody who comes on the podcast. I don't think there's any subject that in the right context can't be joked about. I think everything is fair game. I will never apologize, even if I inadvertently offend somebody. I don't think I would be able to find it in myself to apologize. I would certainly find it in myself to acknowledge that they were inadvertently offended. But to apologize means, I think, a certain amount of regret, a certain amount of contrition, and I don't feel that. I don't think we, and I as the person who kind of is the face of this podcast, I don't think I have anything to apologize for. We make it very clear that there is stuff that is adult content only, and what is said is said. I think the occasional reminder that none of this is said with the intention of offending anybody, that joke, like when Bob said, I'm thinking of killing myself, and we're like, do it on the podcast. That was started and carried on in a context of levity and lightheartedness, and I'm not making light of this individual's concerns. I take them very seriously. However, I take more seriously the notion that free-form speech, the way we have it on this podcast, supersedes the likelihood or the eventuality that someone may be offended. So I do regret that someone felt that to be offensive. I don't apologize for it, and I don't regret having done it. So I do want to say before we carry on, again, I really, really do, with all of my heart, appreciate this individual writing in and voicing their concern. And just so everybody knows, I did write back to this individual, and we've had an exchange or two, and I think we found some common ground, so that's great. But I did want to make sure that this got some airtime on the podcast. And while I won't apologize, and I'm happy to explain why I won't apologize, can I say I regret that someone was inadvertently offended without leaning into an apology? I think I can. Because it's never our intention to offend. It's our intention to, when we talk about the martial arts, to just speak our truth. I'm not pretending we enlighten anybody. I'm not pretending we educate anybody. But I am going to say that we speak our truth as we see it, and that's important. This comment about the suicide thing was outside the scope of that, and we were just kidding around. We were joking. So, Bob.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
I was just going to echo something that Darren said, and that is this person will not get a two-finger salute from any of us. It's, we cherish free speech, and we cherish his free speech. So, yeah, his opinion's welcome.
And I get where he's coming from when he says, I'm worried you're going to call me. No, he didn't say I'm worried, but he said, I feel like I might be called a snowflake. Because we do, there was a podcast we did when Lenny got a bunch of feedback on what we were talking about. And we were fairly hardcore about how we reacted to that individual's feedback. But honestly, I think it's important to realize that we aren't judgmental. If this person, if anybody wants to come on the podcast, we would treat you with the respect that you are due just by someone who's willing to come on the podcast. Like Bob said it once a number of podcasts ago, there's a real camaraderie in conversation. When you're sitting and talking to somebody and conversing with them, there's a certain forgive the term, but brotherhood that you feel with these people that you talk to. And that act of willing to come on the podcast, I think, deserves a great deal of respect. So I hope nobody out there ever thinks about, maybe I'd like to go on the podcast, but they'll treat me like shit. No, please, nothing could be further from the truth.
No, let's qualify that just a bit. If that person came on the podcast, the first thing I would do is call them a fucking snowflake. But it would be well-intentioned and welcoming, which I'm not being sarcastic about. You fucking snowflake. Welcome to the podcast. Let's
see, that's the thing. There's not only camaraderie in conversation. There's camaraderie in good-natured ribbing when you're on the podcast. And we do it to each other all the time. So I don't think anything Bob just said flies in the face of what I had said. So, okay, before we get on, does anybody have any last comments about this particular issue?
Several views were covered there.
Well covered. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on. Okay, folks, so the actual topic for tonight, that only took us 20 minutes to get through. The actual topic for tonight is we've all come up with a couple of talking points. We're going to just toss them out. I love these ones because they're spontaneous. I have no idea what Bob or Darren have come up with. So let's start with Darren. Darren, go ahead. What's your first talking point?
Okay, this one kind of fits just with the people that are on here now. I think if the likes of Jason and Lenny were on here, it wouldn't make as much sense. And with yourself, I've kind of reworded the question where you could still answer it. So my first thing is we've talked in the past about just something will come up and Bob will jump in and say, well, I can't really comment on that because I don't train anymore. And it got me thinking because there's a few things that I would like to be training at, but I just can't anymore because I wouldn't be able to do what I want to do in order to properly get what I want out of whatever the training is. And I was thinking, geez, I wonder what Bob misses the most about not training at all, because he tends to joke around and just say, yeah, no, I don't train anymore, so this is this. And I'm wondering, on a day-to-day thing or a weekly thing or periodically when you're reminiscing, and this isn't just directed at Bob, that's what it reminded me of, but I was thinking of myself and I was thinking even about Mitch. So the question was kind of what do you miss about not training at all, or what do you miss doing that you can no longer do that you still wish you could to an extent? Like, you know, sometimes you get involved in something and maybe you can put up a fairly good go to the new students and stuff, but you'd rather be with other high-ranking people giving it as much or more than them, and you're kind of looking at it going, fuck, I can't do that anymore. Like, I'll be the kind of low man in that totem pole despite my rank. So I kind of direct at Bob first, like, just off the top of your head, what do you miss most about training, if anything at all? Like, you might go, nope, that was a part of my life, I don't actually miss it, I enjoyed it, I've moved on. Or to periodically you sit and go, do you know what, it would be cool to go back and go to a karate camp or train for a little bit just at the back of the room or something.
Okay, so that's a couple of great questions. First of all, I don't for a second regret not training anymore. And you put it exactly the right way. I did that thing and now I'm doing other things. And if you started doing something that held your interest as much as the martial arts had up until that point, I suspect you'd be the same. It's like, okay, I'm doing this other thing now, and I'm getting at least as much as I used to out of that other thing, and now I'm doing this thing, and that's pretty much where I am. I'm having the time of my life, to tell you the truth. But to the other point, that's a loaded question, Darren, because we're all getting older and there's a great deal we can't do anymore. And the thing is, we have to come to terms with that. Some people have an easier time coming to terms with it than others. Some people are going to be clinging to their lost youth with desperate claws until they're dragged to the grave against their will. I'm trying to be more of the, look, we're all getting older, and me too, and here I am, and I'm old. And that's try to come to terms with that peacefully. So to be asked, do you regret not training? Do you regret
not? No, I didn't say regret. I said more or less, what do you miss about it?
What do I miss? I don't miss it. I miss thinking about it. I miss conceptualizing, thinking, contemplating the way I do things and the martial arts themselves. But there's no lack of things to contemplate in this world. So again, I'm not beat up about anything. And some people may interpret that to be, well, here's an old man who just retired and now he's trying to come to terms with being an old man. Well, I suppose that's technically true, but what else do you want me to do? Like, cripes. I'm not long for this world. Let me do what I want. Anyway, Mitch.
I want to interject before Mitch says his points, just because some of what I was thinking of, it wasn't coming out of regret. It was more like, I think one of the things that was on my mind was a few weeks ago when I was watching the UFC, and it was particularly good. And when it gets really good, I was by myself, I had a couple of drinks, and instead of just sitting on the couch watching it, at one point when there was a lot of action going on, I found myself standing up and, you know, getting into it and throwing punches and stuff, as well as analyzing the fight. And when you're analyzing it, you just automatically assume you can do it because you're thinking that he should be doing almost like a coach or an instructor.
Yep.
And you're doing all that. And then when the fight was over, I'm sitting back down and then not regretting anything, but going, geez, I actually miss that aspect of going in and really going hard with all this in mind and playing that chess game and trying to overcome the other person. Now, it's a fleeting moment. You wake up the next day and it's fine. I don't regret anything, but I can say I do miss that. And I wish I could go back in time and do that.
That's an interesting distinction, and I'm not sure I agree with it, that there's a conceptual difference between missing and regretting. If I miss something, in a sense, don't I necessarily have to regret not doing it?
No, because regret is, it's kind of more of a mistake, like admitting a mistake, like I regret that happened or I regret not doing it. Missing something is, I miss the enjoyment I got out of that.
Huh, that's interesting. Mitch, what do you think?
First of all, fuck Darren for...
no, thanks. I'll leave that for Mrs. Darren.
No. No, Darren's question brushes up so closely to my first question that it's hard to separate the two.
Oh, shitty.
So, no, it's actually good because I can separate the two. But to speak to Darren's question, which is, what do you miss? This hits really close to home for me. I'm a very physically minded person ever since I discovered karate, and I'll give equal credit to weightlifting. I've been lifting weights since I was 16 or 17. Those two things have contributed more than anything to my sense of self being completely based around a physical perspective. I see myself as dumb as a stump, but very physically minded. That's how I perceive myself. So to answer Darren's question directly, what do I miss? I miss being able to be as physical as I used to be. And the hardest pill I've ever had to swallow in my life, and I continue to choke on it, is how progressively less able I am to be physical. And I gotta say this before I go further, I have a universe of admiration for Bob's ability to acclimatize himself to that aging process. Bob seems very at home with the changes that he's going through and the reduction in what he's able to do physically. I find I'm having a very difficult time making my peace with it. So I do stupid things, like I try to do what I used to do and I just end up hurting myself doing it. I remember some of the workout routines I used to have when I was 25 or 30, and this isn't anything to do with the club. This is in my own environment. And I try to do some of the things I used to do, and it just doesn't play out well. And I'm 61. Let's make the delineation between being that old and being 35. And as much as I don't like to admit it, there's just a world of difference. So What do I miss? I think in broad terms, I miss being able to be as physically adept as I used to be. Which is why in my waning years, whenever I'm working out with someone and I show signs of that ability that I used to have, it makes me extremely happy because it's a reflection of what I used to be and what I'm rapidly not being able to be anymore. So, hearkening
on that
back,
light note,
hearkening back to the last podcast, I'm going to go kill myself.
Do it on the podcast.
Anyway, so I don't know if I answered the question, but Darren, it's back to you. Your thoughts on your own question.
Well, funny enough, it wasn't meant to be a somber thing and a acceptance of growing
old.
And
welcome to my world.
This way, and a lessening of ability. It was more, as I said, Bob doesn't train at all, so it wasn't a matter of regret or would you go back and change it or do you miss it? It was, the question was more like, what do you miss? And it would be the same with anything. Like if I used to live in Canada and I live over here and someone says, oh, what do you miss about Canada? I'm not going to go into this thing and say, well, I don't have the money to go back to Canada, so I don't regret that and I got to move on and I got to learn to move. No, I go, do you know what I miss? I miss going downhill skiing. That's all. There's no regrets or anything like that. It's just, well, I miss downhill skiing. So it was more supposed to be a lightened sort of thing, like, oh, I miss going out for drinks after a workout, or I miss really, really sweating a workout and almost feeling like dying. And then at the end of the class, because there was no clocks, you didn't know when the class, and all of a sudden when you got called to attention, they started to do that. Remember you used to pat down the back of your, or down the front of your legs and all that? As soon as someone squatted and said, hit the top of your legs, the feeling of relief, because it was fucking over at that stage. And then you'd squat to do that, and then your knees would be sore, and then you'd stand up and do the back, and that just felt like the greatest thing of that day, evening. Little thing like that, like I miss those little feelings. It's got nothing to do with my physicality. I could go train somewhere and feel sick and feel shitty at the end of the class and be happy that it's over. But I miss those. That's one of the feelings that I was missing. That was kind of what I was getting at with the question. Not so much, oh, what do you regret now that you're old and you can't do shit anymore?
Okay, so let me jump in there. And because having listened to Darren expand on the core intent of the question, I miss getting on the dojo floor and just wailing on each other. And I don't miss it because I can't do it. I miss it because there is no one in my circle right now at the club who can do it, which is why I relish when Jason comes back or when Darren comes back and you get to actually get on the floor and fucking work out. That doesn't happen anymore. So more in line with, I think, what Darren's intent was. Yeah, that's what I miss. I miss just getting out on the floor and regardless of how well you do or how poorly you do, you just take whatever you've got and you throw it down and you just train as hard as you can train. And there aren't many people at the club these days who understand what that even means and who are able to do it to a degree where I can do it too and feel some sense of satisfaction out of it. Bob, do you, having heard what Darren just said, do you want to amend what you responded with?
I think part of my inability to respond in a constructive way, I think part of it is that I never, like, I'm very bad at remembering things. I literally never look back on the past. I'm busy with whatever I'm doing at the time, and I just never look back. And I don't know whether that's a bad thing or a great thing, but I think it contributes to the fact that I remember those feelings. I don't miss them. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, I remember all those things, and I'm having sensory memories every day now. They're just different types. That's all. I'm not on a dojo floor pounding forearms with somebody. I'm doing the stuff that I'm doing now, which I won't go into. And that's everything's great. I don't miss. It's crazy. I think it has negative impacts on my personal relationships because I don't respond well. I don't do things like Christmas. I don't celebrate. I don't celebrate holidays. I don't celebrate birthdays. I'm dead inside. Is what I'm getting at. I don't know what to do.
I think Bob struck on or has happened upon the secret to actual joyful existence is not regretting and not looking back and just finding a sort of zen-like appreciation and joy in what your life is. I can't imagine a more satisfying way to do stuff, and it pisses me off to no end that joy seems to escape me.
However, by the very nature of coming on this podcast and discussing stuff that we've done for the past 30 years, it's almost a slight contradiction. Whereas if you only talked about moving forward, then we wouldn't be sitting here talking about past classes, past workouts, past martial artists, past movies, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but the
Fair
thing
enough.
Is...
This is one outlet where I can go through that mental exercise of going back. So I'm grateful for this podcast.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, right. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just thinking it's you had spoken about completely moving on and not remembering anything, but you remember lots of things vividly.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
you'll talk
enough.
About some students that you work with, you'll talk about certain classes, certain martial arts people that you worked alongside, things
yeah,
like that.
Right.
So you do obviously have the memories, the notions vivid enough to be able to articulate them.
Sure, and you're absolutely right, and I don't know where this fits into my whole psychological outlook, but there it is. And
if you're happy, that's the only place it needs to fit, really, when you think about it.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Okay,
crush
Bob.
If you're happy and you know it, crush your forearms together.
Before we go on to Bob's question, I think we covered that one pretty extensively. Any last comments? Yes, no?
Good conversation.
Fair enough. Bob, what's your first talking point?
Now, this is where I really wimped out, because Darren had a great topic, and mine's shitty. I literally couldn't think of
Bob's
anything.
Bob's talking point is,
sorry.
Hey, what are you wearing?
Will I go get my drink now? Or?
I thought, okay, well, why don't I make it a holiday-themed question?
Oh, dear so, God.
I'm sorry, guys. But, all right, my first one is the weaker of the two. I can't even say it. It's so dopey.
I'm actually quite curious now.
So. Oh, deadly. Totally.
Yeah.
No.
Have you?
I stopped slapping my ass to hear this.
Okay. So don't laugh when you hear it, okay? It's all it is I remember it's a holiday theme. It's Christmas.
Will you just go?
Have you ever given or been given a martial arts themed Christmas present, and what was it?
Well, that's fine.
That's not a bad question at all.
Oh, Jesus, that's a good one.
Right, well,
yeah, it is actually a good one.
Thanks for your support.
Bob, who's going first?
Oh, Mitch.
Have I ever been given a martial arts present? Yes, I have.
Yeah, his black belt.
Merry Christmas, fuckwad.
Oh, my God. I don't even have a smart-ass comment to come back to that with. I'll tell you, can it be any gift-giving occasion? Does it have to be Christmas?
Go crazy. There's
okay.
Free association.
The irony is, the best martial art gift I've ever been given, and off the top of my head, I can only think of two of them, and they were both gifts. They were both the same gift, but given to me by different people. Bob made for me a wooden practice dummy. It's a kung fu.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, Bob made one for me. No, like no, it was just you made it for me, and I consider that a gift.
Got it.
So he gave me that. I loved it until I broke it. I loved that thing. And then
was it not made good enough, or did you just go crazy on it?
I went crazy on it. It was
It was actually made harder than any other wing tongue W. I destroyed it.
It was a cards on the
You're
table.
You're not far off, Darren.
It was a railroad tie was used for the vertical part that Bob had cut some holes in, and the holes, the arms and legs were baseball bats. And back in the day, I can hit this as hard as I can, and I love doing it, and it broke. But anyway, so that was one of them. I loved that thing. God damn it, I loved it. And I verbalized to my wife at the time, my ex-wife now, how much I loved it. And for my birthday 1 year, she gave me an actual purchased off of a legitimate martial arts website practice dummy. And I used that thing for years and years and years. I loved
it both
didn't break.
Of those
it
was well made. It was made.
Yeah,
wrong.
No, this thing... I went every bit as hard on it. This thing didn't break. It was a very sturdy practice dummy. But that's my answer to that question. Yeah, though I can't think of another martial arts related gift I've ever been given. Other than those two, and I loved both of them. So that's my answer.
Okay, Darren.
Yeah. No, here I'm no good at that kind of stuff. I don't remember past Christmases and that many years ago, but I do remember getting a pair of Psy one time for Christmas. I'm assuming my dad got them for me. That's the only one I can think of, because I remember, just for whatever reason, like if you could play any instrument, musical instrument, and you end up gravitating toward a certain one, you can't really explain why. That's just the one you go to. And with all the weapons that you could do in any martial arts, for some reason, I just thought the Psy were really cool. And we didn't really do weapons in going up through the training. It just wasn't a weapons club. But a couple people did. You guys were doing the bow. I think my dad did the Psy. And I just thought the Psy was cool. So when I got that, I thought that was going to be great. I never, ever learned how to use them properly, so it was kind of a waste. But I remember I was young and I got them, and I thought that was a cool gift. But I'm sure I got other ones. Like I remember getting t-shirts with martial arts slogans. Actually, incidentally, I got a t-shirt one time. I don't know what age I was, but I remember wearing it to a tournament, and everybody said, and it sounds funny now because we know the difference in martial arts, but at the time it said, "I know karate and 18 other Chinese words." And that's what the t-shirt said. So everybody thought that was hilarious at the time. Now, obviously, karate's not really Chinese, but it was funny shirt. And I remember getting that for Christmas 1 year.
I want to just jump in there because when Darren mentioned the shirt, that brought another example back into my head. A few years ago, we had a guy at the club, a very nice guy. We've talked about him on the podcast before. I don't want to mention his name. But he was a brown belt when he left our club. But every year he would give the black belts a token of a Christmas gift. It was lovely and nice. And 1 year he gave me a shirt, and on the front of the t-shirt it said, "I love karate and about three people." And I thought that was, I still have the shirt. It was way too big for me, so I never wear it. But I still have it, and it still amuses me. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think I would have got uniforms for Christmas and stuff like that, but like, I can't really recall any one incident where I was glowing going, what an awesome gift that's martial arts related. But that's just my own fault. I don't know whether I did get them or didn't, but I can't remember.
Bob, your turn.
Okay, so as soon as I thought of the question, I knew the answer. It was, I don't know, Mitch, when we started the Trilogy Martial Arts Club in Etobicoke. But it was back in that era when we had more or less first opened it. And I was engaged with a redheaded belly dancer And by the way, for anybody listening, don't do that. Don't get engaged to a redheaded belly dancer. It's not.
It's not going to turn out well.
Statistically speaking, it's not. It's
Can I do everything up until the engagement?
Shit. But anyway, she knew how passionate I was about this club that we were opening, and she knew that we were going to be practicing some judo in there. And what she did, and I can't believe how considerate this was and gracious, she bought, was it 6 or 8 real tatami, real judo falling mats. And when she presented them to me on Christmas Day, I teared up. I had never received a Christmas present so considerate and appropriate. And we went on to use them for years. They were very dense, and they were not pillow like to fall on.
Exactly. For anybody who's never actually fallen on traditional Japanese tatami, it's a scene, man. Like those things are not forgiving. They're awesome.
But anyway, yeah. Anyway. So that's that.
Okay. Have we all gone around the table on that one? Anyone else got anything to say about that? Bob, I find it ironic.
That turned out to be a good topic.
I know. I was about to say that took us like 22 minutes to get through. Okay, so here's mine. And after this, we'll take our break. In broad terms, it's called Roads Not Taken. And it kind of links to what Darren was talking about a bit, but it's a little more expansive. In your martial arts career, what are those roads that you may have had some minor experience with but never followed and now look back and regret not having followed? What roads do you look back on and go, I wish I had taken those roads in the martial arts, but I never did?
We kind of touched on that before. There was a question, I don't know whether it was the same kind of thing where we posed the questions, but I think at that time it was, what do you regret not doing? And a couple of things I remember when I was first introduced to grappling, and I didn't take it seriously. I thought we were superior, and I ignored it. I thought it was interesting, but I never bothered to do it. And it was probably, I lost a couple of years on that, and I wish I had have spent more time doing that at the start. And then I remember saying Cali and Eskrima. I remember getting into that, and for whatever reason, I just didn't. And that was probably, must be 15 years ago. Probably close to 20 years ago. I had a liking of it, and I was really interested in it. And I tried some classes, and I really enjoyed them. And I can't remember the circumstances now because it's so far ago. But I never continued on. And ever since then, well, I'm still convinced I will go do it. So it's not a complete loss where I missed the boat and that's it. I'll never get a second chance. I think as recent as 2 or 3 months ago, I went through the directory to see if I could find one of those clubs to train at. But it happens to be they're so far, and the classes are like once or twice a week, and it's far and it conflicts with other things I'm doing. So I probably won't do it. But if I had the chance and there was a club, you know, within a short car distance on nights that I wasn't otherwise engaged, then I definitely do it. So I regret that I didn't do it before, because especially now that you get to our age, anything that I didn't do, you don't just walk in and pick up because you're athletic and gifted and you can just do it. Now it takes a lot more. You've got a lot more life responsibilities. You've got more aged that things just don't come quickly. You can't train every single night at this new art because, you know, you got to give your body a chance to heal. So I think those would be like a kind of regret that I didn't follow that up, because while I can still look into it, I'm not going to be able to jump in with the same fervor that I would have when I first wanted to try it. And I think still looking back, I wish I had have tried other things earlier than I did. it took a while before I kind of left the city and everything and then started experimenting with other things. And I wish that opportunity, like nowadays you join a gym and they throw all the arts at you in that one gym at an early age. And I kind of wish that I had had that opportunity at the early age.
Sorry, I'm pausing just because this question is making me be very thoughtful. And when I get thoughtful, I get a little nostalgic and a little depressed. Bob, any roads not taken martial arts wise?
Yeah, we can all relate to what Darren just said. I myself, I did karate exclusively for I forget how many years. And then after that, it was like, let's just open the gates. And I went and tried whatever I felt like trying. So my situation wasn't as limited as Darren's was, I guess. But, you know, he still had a chance to try a whole bunch of different things. So, no, I don't have any regrets in that regard. The only thing that comes to mind is, and it's not really directly martial arts related, although every martial arts instructor will tell you that it is. I've always been interested in meditation. And all the stuff that's promised that will help you with or do for you. And one of my, I guess it's a regret, is that I never took it up seriously. I was just an amateur for decades who just thought about stuff and didn't actually do it, didn't actually look for a teacher who knew what they were doing in order to, you know, guide me and whatever that was. It would have been a really interesting and potentially fascinating and perhaps life-changing thing to have done, but I didn't do it. So there you go. I guess that fits the criterion.
Well, I totally agree with, I mean, the exact same thing as what Bob just said. I did say that because I was just sticking to martial arts, but definitely I could totally relate to that, 100%.
You know,
and again, the only difference there, sorry, is that is something that you could totally do now because it doesn't demand anything physically.
Yeah.
So you almost have the whole rest of your life to look forward to something that you didn't do up till now.
Yeah, I get it. On the other hand, I'm extremely I'm extremely taken up with the stuff that I'm doing in my spare time. And,
oh, fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, Mitch.
I've got a couple, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on them. One of them is judo. I always say karate is my first love, but judo is my favorite. I love judo. I spend so much time watching judo videos. I will always regret that I didn't get deeper into judo. Although, considering my physical limitations, it's probably a good thing that I didn't, because I'd probably be in a wheelchair if I had.
Go into that a little bit.
I've got a really bad back. I threw my back out the first time when I was 16 from lifting up a bag of groceries and just turning my back the wrong way. And I've been cursed with this bad back ever since. I love, love, love the precision and the marriage of movement that judo requires, far and away beyond what karate does. And we can talk about this in a different podcast. But
judo scares the shit out of me.
Judo's freaking beautiful.
You just don't like it because you don't want to go upside down.
I know, but Jesus Christ, those throws are death-defying. Like, if you hit the ground wrong, you're fucked.
Yeah. No, actually, you know what? It's ironic, because if you're thrown properly, the falls are nothing. The falls
are... No, if you're thrown properly in the sport of judo, if you were using judo as a martial art, you're going to get thrown to get fucked.
Oh, you mean in a practical way? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You throw somebody who doesn't know how to fall.
That's just
you're
scary
fucked.
Shit.
Exactly. Yeah. But I loved judo from the first moment I tried it, and I regret that I never got my black belt. I think I got to late blue belt.
Blue.
I got to blue. And I took some injuries and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, I never got my black belt. Bob did, which is another reason that I
hate him.
I hate my brother. I hate my brother. No, it's another mountain that Bob climbed that I only got partially up. So I would have loved to have gotten my black belt in judo, but I loved it. So there's that, judo. The other one is back in my early black belt days here in Peterborough. I don't remember how it happened, but I ended up in this weird little gym with this weird little guy doing some semi-contact fighting. And I'd never done contact or semi-contact full. I've never done any of that. All of my experience previously had been at the club, and it was all point fighting. So I don't remember, like I said, I don't remember how I got there. But we were doing some semi-contact stuff, and I was really enjoying it. And this was pre-UFC days. Like, this was before the UFC was ever a thing. So just to shorten the story up, I think I would have really quite enjoyed getting into MMA and full contact and all that stuff. I never did. I never pursued it. But looking back on that experience that I did have, I think I would have quite enjoyed it. So I'll leave that alone. And there's one more. Kudo. For anybody who doesn't know what Kudo is, it's Japanese archery. And I love it because it's aesthetically beautiful. I love the mindset that the archers seem to have while they're shooting. I love the meticulousness of the movement. And I especially love the fact that it is never brought into a conversation in terms of practicality. Of course, it's not practical. You got a giant bow that's 16 feet tall, and there's no practicality about it. And everyone who does it understands that and loves it and reveres it anyway. And I love archery anyway. Like, I've got I own like 3 bows myself. And whenever I get the chance, I love to go out and shoot the bow. And I think I would have loved even more the opportunity to dip my toes into the waters of Kudo. I think I would have really, really enjoyed that. And if there was a Kudo club within 100 miles of me, I'd probably still go and do it. But
that's what I was just going to think, because again, that you're not really limited physically. It's no, more of a precision, mental state, etc.
There's just not a convenient way right now to find and train at a Kudo club. However, I'll tell you, I'm kind of inspired after we're done here to go on the internet and see what I could find. Because I think as I age, Kudo just might be the answer to all my prayers and woes. So
we tried looking it up. I don't know how many years ago, 15 or something. But at the Japanese Canadian Cultural Center, they had a Kudo club.
Yeah.
But the waiting list was 2 years long, and it just wasn't.
Wasn't even that. It was that, but on top of that, it was also that. There was once you got in, there was like a 6 week or 8 week course. And depending on how well you did during the initial course, they would determine whether you were allowed to go in and take Kudo on an ongoing basis. So it was too daunting at the time. But I might look into it now, because God knows I can't be doing all the shit I'm doing now for much longer. So so maybe Kudo's the answer. So. Wow. Okay. Those are our first 3 questions. We're going to take our break. We'll come back in a few minutes, and we'll go for the second round of questions. All right.
Awesome.
Break's on, guys. Nice. All right. All right, folks. We're back from the break. We're going to go around for the last set of questions. Let's start with Bob this time. Bob, what's your next question?
Yeah.
Try not to raise our expectations this time.
This is not a good one either.
Jesus.
All I could come up with is, in keeping with the holiday theme, you see, do you have any martial arts memories? And they could be as loosely connected as you want. Martial arts memories that have to do with winter. That specifically have to...
Yes.
Snow on the ground, or yeah.
God damn it.
Or Darren, let's right start with that one.
Go ahead, Darren.
I remember one time, for whatever reason, I was taking the class. Now, we bear in mind that this has been done many times before. It wasn't the first time we were made
qualify.
Exactly.
So
anyway, go ahead.
I remember being at Queen Alexander School, and we'd be in the middle of the class, and it didn't matter the time of year. Just to get outside the school or whatever, you would get out, you'd run around the school as part of the warm-up, and then back into what was going to be the dojo, and you continued the workout. And sometimes you'd do it in the winter, and you'd be like, ow, 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 because it's all freezing cold. And sometimes there could be pebbles all over the cement in the summer, and you're like, ow, 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 because you're walking on pebbles. And it was just
always something. Let's specify that we're in bare feet at this point.
Yes, of course, yeah. So it was just something you did. It just hardened you up, toughened you up, or whatever it was. So I just happened to be taking the class one night and was doing the same thing. The only problem with this particular time was that the club was in a downtown area. So in order to walk around the building, you actually had to go around the entire block, which is probably a little longer than you should be barefoot in the snow. And the other thing is, I'll continue. The other thing is, when you're at the school, it was literally snow. So you just ran around. In the city, the snow would be cleared off, and what was left was pretty much ice. So that it's a little harder on your feet to run in ice than it is to run in snow. So I just thought it'd be a good idea to run around. It was too long. We got back in the class. And then we just started the thing. And because I was teaching, I was still able to walk around. Now, my feet still hurt, but I could still walk around, whereas I was getting everybody else to stand in stances, which wasn't conducive to getting the feeling back in your feet. And it was a huge mistake, obviously, looking back. But it's hilarious looking back.
Actually,
it's probably one of the main memories I have based on the snow thing.
Sorry, guys, I got to throw, because I was in that class. Like, I was one of the guys that was a victim of Darren's instruction that night. And he's not exaggerating. He took us around to run a huge city block. As I recall, it was like minus 25 degrees. Like, it was really unreasonably, like, stupidly cold out. So everything Darren said is true. And when we got back to the dojo, we were all in a horse stance and he was walking around. And of course, in a horse stance, you're gripping the floor. So there's no chance for the blood to circulate through your feet. And I got a pretty severe case of frostbite. One of the other guys, Jason, was crippled. he got the worst case of it. However, I do want to put this on top of that. Looking back, this is weird. I look back on that very fondly. That feeds into the thing Bob said, when some of the fondest memories you have are the hardest thing you had to go through. Yeah. And while I would never recommend somebody do that purposely, I don't regret for a second that it happened. So sorry, Darren, I didn't mean to take the
story.
No,
that's fine. No.
But yeah, yeah.
And the only other one,
I have a fond memory of that, and I wasn't even in it.
I remember one Christmas party that the club would have, and the club would just be like the members of the club, and that was it. And somebody was
about Christmas parties.
Somebody was usually Santa each year, but you might know who it is. I can't remember, but Santa would come in and just do his thing, and if there was kids there, he'd give presents to the kids, or if it wasn't that many kids, it was just Santa, and it was funny. And I remember at one point we were there and Santa came in. We didn't know who it was. We just assumed one of the black belts had got somebody to do it. We just hadn't been told. And they got my dad, who was the head instructor, up there to sit on his lap, and Santa slapped him across the face. And as soon as Santa did that, my dad went, "Sensei?" And somebody asked him afterward, and he goes, "Well, I can't think of anybody else that would just walk up and slap me in the face. It had to be my instructor." But he was from Toronto, so there was no thought that he was ever coming to this party. No one knew he was coming to the, well, somebody knew, obviously, but obviously my dad didn't know. And it was just, so for him to have no concept that his instructor was coming down from Toronto for the Christmas party, but as soon as he slapped him in the face, he just went, Sensei?
Okay. Sorry, Bob, that was your question. I guess I'm next, or do you want to go?
Bob? No, you go ahead.
Okay. I don't have any, other than the running around in the middle of the, you know, the dead of winter and getting our toes frozen off. I don't really remember anything that is winter specific. Although I, you know,
well,
what
I got one more.
I've got. Let me tell this one quick. Yeah. I've got a couple from Christmas parties, but those are just.
That's
drunken.
What I was going to say.
I'll tell you. I'll leave those for Darren to tell. When I was at university, I was 20, I think, 20, 21. It was the year before I started karate, and there was this girl at university, Trent University, and I was living in residence. I don't remember her name, but I do remember that she joined some martial arts thing, and my memory, as I recall, it was at the Queen Alex building, and it was through the winter because university starts in September, October. And she would go a couple of times a week, and I remember her coming back, and her comments were, the classes are all outside. It doesn't matter what the weather is. We train outside. That's just a thing. And I remember being incredibly impressed, not only that there was a martial art that apparently trained outside no matter what the weather conditions, but that this girl, who was a little wisp of a girl, very, very sweet, very nice, but she would come back and her face would be like blood red because it's so cold outside. And I remember being so impressed with her for having the fortitude to go and train outside like that. That's weird that came back to me. I haven't thought about that in decades, but I do remember that. So that's the best I can do in terms of a winter-related martial arts memory. Darren, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, here. Where do we start? The first one that came to mind that I was thinking when you said something about Christmas parties, I remember being a kid, and the Christmas parties were at the Knights of Columbus Center in George Street on Peterborough. I remember they were ruckus back then because there was like a couple hundred members of the club. So I'm assuming they had a DJ and everybody was up dancing. And me and this other guy, we went around to all the tables where the drinks were and just took a sip out of everybody's drink. So no one would, like, we didn't walk away with people's drinks to make it look obvious. We just took sips out of every drink. And I'd say we must have been 12 or something like that. And we were locked.
Jesus.
Oh, my God.
That was one. I'm not going to tell the one with the guy leaned up against the stove. That's a different one.
I'll tell that one.
I was going to tell that one.
Another
one.
That's a great story.
It was at Reg Lake's place, and I was doing the whole bartender thing like I usually end up doing in those things. And Randy
Davis?
What was his last name? Randy Davis was there, nice. Who's not a very good drinker. And he's aggressive at the best of times, and with a few drinks on him, he's even more aggressive. And we started arguing for some reason. And I was drunk as well. And I said something about being able to take him. And he's like, well, let's go then. I'm like, seriously, okay, let's go. And people were kind of jumping in. It's going, this is inappropriate and everything. And he's going, yeah, you're not going to fight me because of the rank thing and all that. And I said, no, we'll go outside. And it's got nothing to do with the club. So in the end, I started to step out from behind the bar. And he took a step to go toward the door. And he lost his footing. He fell down and he cracked himself and he was already drunk. He was like falling down drunk and people just helped him up and out the door and he went home. So we never got into it after that. And he had no recollection of it. Like he trained for a year or two after that and had no recollection of that event. And we never had an argument like that after again. It was just one of those things at that time.
Bob,
Mitch, you're going to tell the John Lewis story?
That's
Mitch, you're going to tell the John Lewis story?
Should we let that one go or tell that story?
No, okay. You tell it, but it was, I'll start.
Go ahead.
Wait, I'll give my little story, and it's like it's not as good. So all I remember when I thought of the question of a winter-related thing was that time, Mitch, you're going to have to help me with my memory here. Was it going to DeLemer's Club in Scarborough? Mm. We were driving there. And it
yes,
was,
it was.
It was blinding snow outside.
Yep.
And the conditions were such that you would routinely see cars in the ditch. It was just not like it was bad. And it's
no, it was just to augment what Bob's saying. It was we were driving down the Don Valley Parkway, and it was like a skating rink. Like literally, cars were sideways sliding down the road. It was that's how bad the weather conditions were. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's really all I remember. All I remember is going to the club and working out regardless. You know, in retrospect, maybe it wasn't the smartest thing to do, but certainly no regrets. And was it a judo class? Or I totally forget what.
No, it was a judo class for sure. Yeah, it was a judo class. Bob reminded me of a similar story, but it happened in Peterborough. Bob and I were both in Peterborough, and it was a horrible snowstorm, like really bad. And Bob and I managed to fight our way up. This is back at the Queen Alex building. And we got there, and there was no one else there. Like, the place was empty. But Bob and I showed up. So Bob called Mark Bell. Bob called Sensei. And he called us some interesting names for being so stupid as to go out in this kind of weather. But yeah, Bob and I ended up working out together, just the two of us, because we were there. We may as well work out. But yeah, that's the same kind of story. It was just, who cares about the weather? We have to work out. It's time to work out. There's no...
Back in my day, we made it up to the club no matter what it was like outside.
Okay, so that's that. Let's skip the John Lewis story. That's just not even karate related.
For another time.
That's just stupid related. That was Bob. Darren, what's your second question?
Okay, this one is based... obviously a lot of experience over the years, but it's more of an opinion. There's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious. I was going to tell the story to set the question up, but I think I'd like to leave it just to hear both your opinions, and then I'll tell the story that led me to posing this question. Sorry. So if you take, I'm trying to think of what martial art or sport in general do you think would make the best base that would prepare you for either self-defense or, say, sport fighting? When I say sport fighting, it could be tournaments, could be UFC, any of that kind of thing. So whether it's gymnastics, whether it's grappling, whether it's kickboxing, Thai, whatever it is, like in your opinion, from your experience, based on what you've practiced, what you've watched, whatever, over the years, what do you think, like if you were telling someone and there wasn't a club in their town that taught mixed martial arts and covered everything, and they were like, where should I start that will give me the best preparation for self-defense or whatever, assuming that each club does exist, there's just not one that encompasses them all?
Wow,
that's a good question. Darren, who's going first?
Whoever can think off the top of their head without going, give me a couple minutes to consider.
Let me go then, because I got it. Yeah. I've got the answer. I've looked at them. Okay, there's a two-pronged answer here. One is philosophically based, one's practically based. Let me go philosophical first. I have always, not always, in the last probably 5 years, I've really started to look at the martial arts as a study of movement more than anything, more than how to punch and how to kick. I look at it as a study of how the human body is capable of moving and mastery of that movement. So given that, I think any art form or any sport that teaches the greatest breadth of movement would give you the best base. So forget about hockey, forget about football, forget about any of those kind of sports. Outside of the martial arts, I would look at things like gymnastics. I think gymnastics are amazing in terms of the breadth of ability relative to body movement. So outside of the martial arts, I would go with that. In the scope of the martial arts, I don't think there's even a question. It's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's ground-based self-defense, whether it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, whether it's another ground-based art form, wrestling. I've been watching some video clips on wrestling training, judo, I think, as well. I think if you're looking for a foundation upon which to build an effective self-defense repertoire, anything that starts on the ground and anything that encompasses the most amount of movement. So I'm going to go back to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu would be my top, and then I would move down with like judo certainly and that sort of milieu. So there you go. That's my answer.
Can I just explore something you said? You were talking about the expanse of movement and what takes in the most movement. So given what you've been studying, as you said, about the movement and stuff, would you, like if you were teaching a karate class now, would you eliminate some of the stances considering that these stances aren't the best way for the body to move in a self-defense setting?
I'm going to give you a two-pronged answer to that. As a
four prongs.
I don't know what to say to that.
It's a two-fingered answer is what he's giving.
I'm a slave to tradition. So in a traditional sense, if I am following someone else's curriculum as an instructor, no. But if I were writing my own style or my own curriculum, absolutely. There are so many stances that our traditional style has that not only do I think are ridiculous and useless, but I think they are counterintuitive. They limit your movement rather than expanding on it. So to answer your question, absolutely. There's so much crap that we could just strike off the roster of what we do.
Now,
that
again,
I think
remember
would...
the question was regarding effective self-defense or sport fighting. So it has nothing to do with tradition.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's not to say whether tradition is good or bad or whether you would
Exactly.
Literally just what you think would be the best base if you had some kid getting beat up all the time and where would you send him to train?
Right now, if a parent came to me and said, look, my kid's getting the crap beat out of him every second day at school. I want him to learn to defend himself. Karate is the last place I'd send him. And especially karate in Peterborough. I would say go to a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu club. Go to 10th Planet. We got a 10th Planet here in town. Go there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I'm about 5 minutes away from going there myself because I've always loved groundwork. And I know the guy who runs 10th Planet here in Peterborough. He's a very good guy. He used to be a student at the club in Peterborough way back when. At Jiu-Shin way back when. But anyway, yeah, if someone came to me with that parameter, I want my kid to be able to defend themselves. Don't do karate. Please don't do karate. Go to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's my answer. Bob.
Something that's been overlooked in almost all of our discussions, but I think, and it harkens back to a question that we were talking about earlier today. The road's not taken. And that's basic boxing. First of all, that's a great base, I think. Full contact is part of the curriculum at all times. There are the traditional stances that we're so used to in karate are out the window. I think it ought to be included in the lexicon that we're talking about. And,
I couldn't disagree more. Look, boxing is like judo. Boxing is like judo, is like aikido. In the scope of what they do, yeah, they're... You know, like you don't go to judo to see a streetwise self-defense. You go to judo to watch judo. And I put boxing in that same category. Look, if someone said to me, I want a stand-up art that gives me the best base, I might consider boxing over karate just because we have so much extraneous shit that doesn't fucking matter. But in terms of broad scope, what will give me the best base to build a self-defense repertoire from, again, I would never start with a stand-up art.
Yeah, that's kind of backwards thinking in my like.
Yeah, go back to Bob. I want to hear your reasoning behind it. This is based on opinion. There's no right or wrong.
Yeah,
We obviously will argue and discuss it, but I'm curious as to the
like in an actual fight, you start standing and you end up on the ground. Isn't that kind of the way you would want your your training to evolve, start standing and then go down?
Well, isn't a question of what percentage of the fight is more likely to be standing versus on the ground? And I was a bouncer for a while. I don't want to pretend I've got this huge expanse of streetwise self-defense. But in most of the circumstances that I was involved in, there was about 5 seconds of groping and wild striking, and then everybody's on the ground. So my perspective has always been groundwork. In an effective martial arts self-defense perspective, groundwork is going to give you a better base. Obviously, you want everything. But if I have to choose, I'd start with a ground art first.
I don't know. If you are wanted to be expert in a ground-based martial art, your first task is to bring it to the ground. And how do you do that if you can't stand, if you don't have a standing basis for what you're doing?
I think Darren needs to weigh in on that one. He's muted himself. I'll start.
No, sorry, I was just solely laughing or saying or coughing. I'll give you the background that made me come to the question. I funny enough, Bob's touching on why I asked the question to begin with. I recently watched I guess it was a podcast, but it was just one person, so it wasn't a conversation. It was one guy giving his opinion on what he had noticed recently, and it was based on what is the best base for UFC fighters now, and it turns out that 5 out of the 8 champions are all stand-up fighters, and when you look back at when the UFC first started. The Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys came in and just mopped everybody up because nobody knew what the fuck they were doing. And those guys could just take you down and that was it. And then the American wrestlers, which, as you touched on, Mitch, that the training they do is grueling and everything they do is geared toward the work ethic and everything they do, the cardio, everything. So they came in and they thought, well, as long as we learn how to defend against these Brazilian jiu-jitsu submissions, there's no way they're going to be able to compete with our wrestling. And that's what happened. And all the American wrestlers came in and they started dominating the UFC because all they had to know was a few defenses and they just ground and pound. And that's where that whole terminology came in. And then the stand-up fighters that were getting taken down said, well, all we got to do is defend the takedown. And like what Bob said, if your whole base is standing and the other guy is the ground, all you got to do is prevent that guy from taking you to the ground, and that guy has no stand-up ability, and that's what happens. And for a while, the stand-up people started to dominate. And then you got a new group that were kind of a little bit more mixed and were able to do it all, and it kind of changed. And it's kind of gone in, I guess, a bit of waves. But right now, the fact is, as I said, 5 out of 8 champions are purely stand-up-based fighters that learned enough defense not to go to the ground,
okay.
Whereas the ground-based fighters have not learned enough to be able to handle themselves standing up.
Okay, but let me jump in and say my understanding of your original question was from a streetwise self-defense perspective.
I said or sport or UFC kind of.
Fair enough. Thing. Yes, and I only looked at it from the streetwise because, look, on the street.
But I still have to – it's still on the street unless – you still have to get the fight to the ground. If you're a good stand-up fighter, you should be able to, especially if it's in a bar or on the street, you should be able to move around enough to not get taken down.
Okay.
If you're in the cage, okay, you're going to get plumped up against the cage and then the grappler can get you down and it's not as good. But if you've got an open thing, you can outrun the guy and turn around, punch him, kick him,
okay,
do
but
whatever.
Here's a question for you. In the average street fight, and I don't know that any of us have enough experience to answer this, in the average street fight, the person you're going to end up against, what level of training, what level of experience do they have? My experience, again, now this is 30 years ago when I was a bouncer, but most of the guys that I got into street fights with in my bouncing circumstance, first of all, were drunk, and secondly, couldn't punch their way out of a wet paper bag anyway. So it's a question of What will give you the best ability to defend yourself in the most likely street-based circumstance?
Okay, let's even just to put it in the bouncer circumstance, if you're put in that situation, do you really want to drop down to the ground and take that guy down amongst all his friends and whoever else is there?
Good point.
Or do you want to be able to put him down really quickly from your stand-up and you can remain standing up to deal with anybody else?
Perfectly good point. I will also say, however, that the majority, and I'm trying to think back now because, like I said, it's 30 years ago, I don't remember any circumstances where I was a bouncer, where I got into a circumstance with somebody where they had anybody standing around willing to fight for them because most of their friends were all liquored up and still in the bar. So all of the circumstances I got into when I was a bouncer, it was one guy who was being overly belligerent. Now, here we go again, another contradiction. In the circumstances I actually got into where it came down to a fight, it was resolved on our feet. So maybe I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I think I'm going to go with that.
It's more just food for thought. Like, obviously, as I said, the evolution of the UFC has gone.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's very cyclical.
Exactly. So
exactly.
I think it's open to there's a case to be said for each one, but opinion wise, if you were sitting here right now and your kid was 16 and said, where do you want me to train? Where would you direct them and why? So we can argue and say which one's better, but I think each art kind of has a great base. Not every art, but I mean each art that we've discussed. Boxing, I think Bob's spot on with the boxing thing.
Me too.
I would just throw on kicks. Sure. I would throw in something like Muay Thai because you have the boxing. But you can do sweeps. You can take the guy out, knees to the groin. Boxers tend not to do that. So if you can do a style like, say, kickboxing, where your boxing is an integral part of it, but you've added a few extra things that might serve you well in a quick circumstance where you have to react.
That twigs off another point, and that is, like, if you do boxing or, granted, kickboxing, you learn how to take a punch to the face. Like
That's 100% good point.
Traditional
as well.
Martial arts don't do that. It's just, I think
and
a
grappling
big
doesn't. There's the old joke that people used to say is, how would they say, a black belt is only a black belt until he gets punched in the face, and then he's a yellow belt, or a white belt. There is an avid saying about that where it says,
Mike Tyson said something like, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Right. Exactly. okay. Sorry. That comment made me think of my next question, which is different than the second question I was going to ask. But before I get there, did we want to finish that topic out? That was a really good goddamn question, Darren. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think Darren hit it on the head where it's food for thought rather than a definitive answer that we're
or as Lenny would.
And that's what I wasn't expecting anybody to blow my mind and say, this is why. And then you go, holy fuck. And it was just more to make you think and go, fuck yeah, there's a lot more to just each art and why and how much you would spend on each art in order to get the best out of it and still be effective.
Or as Lenny would say, food for thought. Shout out to Lenny. Okay. So I'm going to abandon the last question I had because I've got a question that was leveraged off this last conversation. And here it is. In your martial arts career, and I'm not talking about street fights, so let's leave that out of it. In your martial arts training, tournaments, whatever, what's the hardest hit you've ever taken? And I don't want just a description of what happened. How did you react? What was your mental state when it happened? Because I have one clearly in mind, and I am curious about what your guys' experience is. Bob.
Oh, I guess this qualifies, but sorry, Mitch. we were doing judo, and it was just you and me, and there was a girl, student, and Mitch and I were sparring judo wise, and he accidentally threw me, and I landed on my head. Like, I landed with my body weight coming down, upside down, on my head, and ended up lying on the bench outside the dojo for the rest of the class. I couldn't move. And
I don't know why you apologized. I'm quite proud of that, actually.
I remember we went to a pub afterward, and I was in too much pain to be able to take a sip of beer. I couldn't function, and so it kind of we had to say goodnight, and that was the end of that. But I ended up going to bed and waking up a couple hours later, and then just giving my head a snap, and there was this huge amount of cracking. And everything fell back into place, and I was fine. And I called Mitch in order to reassure him that I was okay, and that was the end of that. But that was memorable.
Darren,
I was in a tough man competition one time, which was just boxing. They called it a tough man competition, but it was just boxing. There was boxing rules and everything. And funny enough, one of the exercises that the coach put me through when I was doing training was. The whole, did we have a baseball? No, we wouldn't have had a baseball bat. No, maybe it was a baseball bat. Whatever it was, you spun around and around and around and around until you were dizzy as fuck, and then you had to do laps up and down the dojo. And I remember people saying, this is fucking stupid. What's this got to do with fighting? And he explained, he said, look, when you get rocked, he goes, you'll know when you get rocked because it'll take your equilibrium out of you. So if you practice this all the time, it gives you that experience and how to recover when your balance is all fucked up. So we just went along with it. We kept doing it, among other things. And up till then, like, I've got cracked before many times where you get a busted lip or you fall down or whatever. You're cracked. I've never had my nose broken. I've never been knocked out. But the first fight in the boxing tournament, this guy was huge. He was muscular. I was intimidated. And within the first little bit, he cracked me harder than I've ever been cracked in all my training or any fights on the street or anything. And I remember almost going down, and my body kind of pivoted. Like, I lost my balance, and I just recovered. And I'm assuming it was based on that whole training we did. And I recovered, and I stood up, and he was running at me because he figured he had me on the ropes or whatever. And I just I put my guard up, and I kept kind of moving disjointedly. But it was enough to stay out of range of his punches. And then almost, now that sounds like a big long story. That whole equilibrium thing was probably 3 seconds or something like that. I remember at the time in my head, I thought I was done. I wasn't even thinking about recovering. It was just kind of an instinctual thing. And then when I did recover, I went on and I ended up knocking him out in the first round. But I think to your thing, that was the hardest I've ever been hit. And I remember at the time, as I said, thinking that was done. I lost this fight. After all the training, I'm losing the fight in the first fucking 20, 30 seconds of the fight. What an embarrassment. And then the reacting and recovering from it. And it was all kind of, it was almost surreal. But obviously, if people do that all the time and they box all the time and they take full contact hits all the time, it would seem second nature to them. But because we had grown up point fighting. This was my first trip to Vancouver, by the way. So I had just left the whole point fighting thing of karate, and then I got involved in this kickboxing club, and there was a boxing tournament, and I said, well, I could do that, and went from there. So I hadn't had that experience of getting hit in the head to that extent.
Okay, so back in 2017, when I was training to go to Ireland for that that tournament, we were at Scott Hogarth's dojo in Milton, and all the competitors were there, and we were just fighting each other. We were just sparring, but we were doing it like tournament style. So we were all standing around the outside of the sparring area, but only two people were fighting at a time, so everyone was watching. And there's a guy in Southern Ontario. His name is Ryan Feiss. He runs a club now. He runs a club in Bowmanville. Just a remarkably good fighter. And he came up. They called him up. And, okay, who wants to fight Ryan? And no one stepped forward. So, stupidly, I said, I'd love to. Like, I've fought Ryan a couple of times in the past. I know him. He's so fine. I'll fight him. So we get up. And we get in a fighting stance. And the center ref says, go. And I'm told
that.
He did a dropping wheel kick that almost took my head off. Like, it hit me right on the right side of my jaw. And I don't remember very much on it. It didn't knock me out. I remember I stayed on my feet, but it rocked me like I had never been rocked before. It just, my whole world just stopped making sense. Like, I wish I could describe it more accurately.
It reminds me of a Warner Brothers cartoon where the bird cages and the right, flippity, exactly, floppity cartoon images are flying.
Exactly.
Where's my happy place?
But you know what? I wanna talk about that for a second, because there's a couple of things that that happened. Obviously, he almost killed me. I was impressed with myself that I managed not to pass out. And I'm not sure that's something I should be impressed with. I think that was more happenstance than anything. I don't think it had much to do with my internal fortitude or anything like that. I think I was just goddamn lucky that I didn't get knocked out. However, I will say this. That was one of the first times that, and it's happened a couple of times since, where I was fighting somebody and I got that wake up call that you get as you're getting older, that you're just not that good anymore. This is just someone else who's remarkably younger and better than I ever was. And I just can't compete on that level. And that's what I took away from that. And that might sound like a negative, but I really don't think it is. I think a realistic understanding of your ability is important, and I will forever, and I've never spoken to him about this. So Ryan, if you're listening, honestly, I appreciate that happening, because it was a very clear line of demarcation between what I thought and what was, you know, like what the reality was. But anyway, to answer the question, yeah, that was the hardest. That's the hardest hit I've ever taken. He just about took my head off. And like I said, I'm relating this based on third-party perspectives, because I did not see it. All, like, I don't mind.
Is Butterbean okay?
Is Butterbean okay? Did I hurt Ryan? Is he all right? I don't mind getting hit by stuff that I see and I just can't be fast. The stuff that I don't even see, it's just, it was so remarkably out of my scope of vision and experience, but I'll never forget how it felt. Wow.
Did he get called for contact?
Nope.
That's what I was thinking about.
No, he did not, actually. And you know what? I'll give them this. It was supposed to be a no contact tournament, but the reality of that tournament was...
Oh, yeah, I was there.
Yeah, the reality of that tournament. There was a lot of contact there. I just about caved in the liver of the guy I was fighting, and I didn't get called for it. So I have got no stance to, or no standing to complain. Was it harder than I was expecting to get hit? For sure. But like I said, it was a really poignant moment in my growth as a martial artist. So no hard feelings, Ryan. God love you, brother. I never want to fight you ever again. So there you go. That's what that came down to. All right, folks, we're going to bring this one to a close. Like I said, last podcast of 2023. Sincere thanks to Bob and Darren for being on this. I know everybody else was busy, and I absolutely get that. Thank you guys for taking the time to come on the podcast. I don't want to get weepy, but it means a lot. So thank you both. Any comments, questions, again, to the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Let's just shut this one down, guys. Thank you so much. We're done. We're gone. We're out.
Merry Christmas.
All right. There we go.
I think a nap would do me a world of good.